The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Wednesday. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com and on YouTube. Hi, YouTubers. And of course, heard weeknights, or Tuesday through Friday night from 6 to 7 Eastern on the Progressive Voices Network. So there I was this morning watching on MSNBC Velshi and Rule. I really like Ali Velshi, and for the most part, I like Stephanie Rule. And they were promoting that they were going to have on the attorney for Roy Moore. And I thought, all right, I got to see what a guy who would defend this guy is like. Roy Moore, not doing any media, but he's putting his attorney, Trenton Garman, out there. And what followed was one of the weirdest exchanges I think I've ever heard. So let me share it with you. This really happened on television.
Okay. If Roy Moore doesn't remember, how could he say that it's definitively false? And number two, why would he need permission from any of these girls' mothers if they weren't underage?
Sure, that's a good question. And culturally speaking, obviously there's differences. I looked up Allie's background there. Wow, that's awesome that you have got such a diverse background. It's really cool to read through that. But point is this.
What does Allie's background have to do with dating a 14-year-old?
I'm not finished with the context of it.
Well, please answer. What does Ali Velshi's background have to do with dating under children, 14-year-old
girls? Good question.
Sure. In other countries, there's arrangement through parents for what we would refer to as consensual marriage. So
Ali's from Canada.
I understand that. And Ali's also spent time in other countries,
so
of which I've gone to. So it's not a bad thing.
I don't know where you're going with this, Trenton.
Stephanie, to answer, but here's the answer to your question.
Oh, my God.
So he said no, comma. So he answered no. And then he went on to say his process would be, before he date anybody, whether they're 25, 35, or whether
sure.
he doesn't know their age, he would ask the mother's
35
permission.
35-year-old, he'd ask the mother's
no.
There's permission.
There's no inconsistency in that. And I stand by the answer. To me, it's the most appropriate, proper answer. When I begin to court my wife.
I have not spent time in Alabama, and that is your community. You have young daughters.
Sure.
If your daughter was 14, would you think it's appropriate that she date a man in his 30s? Would you think it was normal that a random man sign her yearbook?
I would say no. If someone came to me like what was postulated there and said, may I date your daughter, don't know her age, I would say no.
Okay, so obviously the second part of it was just weird. But the first part where he said Ali Velshi, because of his background, would know about dating a 14-year-old. If you go to Ali Velshi's Twitter page, I'm just going to read to you directly from his little bio. It says, I actually am a Kenyan-born Muslim raised in Canada. So I guess that's what this lawyer was talking about, the fact that Ali Velshi was born in Kenya and is Muslim. He would know about arranged marriages or whatever kind of nonsense this guy was spewing.
If Roy Moore doesn't remember, how could he say that it's definitively false? And number two, why would he need permission from any of these girls' mothers if they weren't underage?
Here we go.
Sure. That's a good question. And culturally speaking, obviously, there's differences. I looked up Ali's background there. Wow, that's awesome that you have got such a diverse background. It's really cool to read through that. But point is this.
What does Ali's background have to do with dating a 14-year-old?
I'm not finished with the context of it.
Well, please answer. What does Ali Velshi's background have to do with dating under children, 14-year-old girls?
Sure. In other countries, there's arrangement through parents for what we would refer to as consensual marriage. So.
Arrangement through parents for potential marriage. First of all, Roy Moore didn't marry any of these girls. He molested them. Secondly, this wasn't arranged by parents. Thirdly, it has nothing to do with Ali Velshi. Oh, my God. So Roy Moore not only will not get on TV and, I guess, defend himself, but he sends out a lawyer. That guy's got a law degree? Wow. To show that he's a racist, too? Stunning. Absolutely stunning. Just when you think you can't be any more shocked comes more of what I heard last night. So anyway, I just had to share that with you because it was the most dumbfounding thing that I've heard all day. Yes. In Alabama, arranged marriages happen after the girl gets pregnant. Oy, oy, oy. But I guess if you're a Kenyan Muslim, you would know about these things. Unbelievable. Well, there's some encouraging news out of Capitol Hill. Just, I guess it was last week, we heard the Senate said that they were going to, they passed a resolution to require sexual harassment training in the Senate, excuse me, for all members and staffers. And yesterday, Paul Ryan said that the House of Representatives will also adopt mandatory training on sexual harassment and discrimination. Yesterday, of course, there was testimony in the House, which I forget which committee it was. I know I have it in What's News, so you'll hear about it in a moment, where they were, you know, a hearing where members were talking about stories. One member, a Republican from Virginia, Barbara Comstock, told the story of a young female aide who was asked to deliver materials to a male member of Congress. A member, I guess, is the operative word there, because when the woman arrived at the member's residence, the member greeted her in a towel, Comstock said, and proceeded to expose himself. The woman quit her job. The lawmaker remains in office. Well, yesterday, last night, Jackie Speier, a congresswoman from California, who's been really at the forefront of this, she's told how she was harassed as a Hill staffer before she was a member of Congress. She's been instrumental in trying to get these rules changed. She spoke with Chuck Todd yesterday, and what she said is also just absolutely stunning.
So what you're saying now is that you know of two individuals who have paid out sexual harassment settlements. So taxpayer money has been used to protect the identity of these members of Congress?
One member of Congress has settled a claim, and there has been a taxpayer settlement.
Is this something that, if the taxpayer is involved, don't we have the right to know?
Well, I think you do have the right to know. But right now, under the system, you don't have a right to know.
Mm-hmm. Is this something you think you will retroactively deal with?
I don't know that we can retroactively deal with it because that's a contract that's been signed by both parties. I think moving forward, we absolutely must. Now, we do know that there's about $15 million that has been paid
$15 million.
Out by the House on behalf of harassers in the last 10 to 15 years.
$15 million has been paid out over sexual harassment claims, so obviously more than one member of Congress. Do you know how many over time that is? I know that some of them are former members now.
I don't really know how many members that entails.
Is this some information that's going to get disclosed now over time? I mean, again, considering this is taxpayer money, it feels as if it should, I assume, if you put it to a vote of the House, is this something that you think should be retroactively done? Let me ask it that way.
I think that we've got to, you know, represent that moving forward this is going to be done. You can't, I think, tinker with pre-existing contracts that have been signed off by both parties. So,
because people are being paid off to keep their mouths shut. That's how these things happen. That's how these things work. You know, all of Bill O'Reilly's accusers have been paid off, some to the tune of upwards of $30 million, and to be quiet. It's hush money. So the abusers get away with the abuse. And the way that the rules in Congress have worked is not in the victim's favor. So, but she's saying going forward, hopefully that will change. I know she introduced some legislation today as well. But of course, Jackie Speier is a Democrat, so any legislation she introduces is just going to be ignored. Let's hope the Republicans do the right thing. And yeah, that's where the laugh comes from. There's other news today. The big story is that the Senate is going to put the repeal of the Affordable Care Act insurance mandate into their tax plan. And we'll get into that at the bottom of the hour with our interview. We're going to speak with someone who knows all about the Affordable Care Act. Also, you know, reluctantly, for me anyway, known as Obamacare. So we'll do that. But first, a look at the news.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Another day in America and another shooting. This time, four people are dead and 10 injured after a gunman opened fire in Northern California at several locations, including an elementary school Tuesday. Police said the gunman was shot dead by police after what they believe started as a domestic violence incident. There were three hearings of note on Capitol Hill on Tuesday. Attorney General Jeff Sessions was grilled by the House Judiciary Committee on a number of topics. As with his previous appearances under oath, Sessions had a difficult time with his memory. Congressman Hakeem Jeffries of New York asked about it.
Mr. Sessions, I have a copy of the transcript of your testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee in October. You stated under oath, I don't recall, in some form or fashion, 29 times. Is that correct?
I have no idea.
I have a copy of the transcript of your testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee in June. You stated under oath, I don't recall, in some form or fashion, approximately 36 times. Is that correct?
I don't know.
In your testimony today, you have stated, I don't recall, at least 20 times. Is that fair to say?
I have no idea.
Despite his memory problems, Sessions insisted he didn't lie.
But most of you have not participated in a presidential campaign, and none of you had a part in the Trump campaign. It was a brilliant campaign, I think, in many ways, but it was a form of chaos every day. We traveled sometimes to several places in one day. Sleep was in short supply. And I was still a full-time senator with a very full schedule. During this year, I've spent close to 20 hours testifying before Congress, before today. I have been asked to remember details from a year ago, such as who I saw on what day, in what meeting, and who said what to when. In all of my testimony, I can only do my best to answer your questions as I understand them and to the best of my memory. But I will not accept and reject accusations that I have ever lied. That is a lie.
Sessions seemingly pushed back on the suggestion that a special counsel be appointed to investigate Hillary Clinton.
What's it going to take to actually get a special counsel?
It will take a factual basis that meets the standards of the appointment of a special counsel.
And is that analysis going on right now?
Well, it's in the manual of the Department of Justice about what's required. We've only had two. The first one was the Waco, Janet Reno, Senator Danforth, who took over that investigation as special counsel, and Mr. Mueller. Each of those are pretty special factual situations.
Let me ask it this
way. And we will use the proper standards, and that's what only thing I can tell you, Mr. Jordan.
Well, I appreciate that.
You can have your idea, but sometime we have to study what the facts are and to evaluate whether it meets the standard.
Well said. So let me ask you this. If, in fact,
a special counsel.
Sessions sided with Roy Moore's accusers when questioned by Sheila Jackson Lee.
As you well know, Lee Kaufman, Wendy Miller, Debbie Watson Gibson, Gloria Thacker Deason, and Beverly Young Nelson, these young women have accused this individual, Judge Moore, who is running for a federal office, the United States Senate, of child sexual activity. Do you believe these young women?
I am have no reason to doubt these young women.
In a hearing at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, senators considered for the first time in more than 40 years whether the president should continue to have sole authority to launch a nuclear attack. Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut.
We are concerned that the president of the United States is so unstable, is so volatile, has a decision-making process that is so quixotic that he might order a nuclear weapons strike that is wildly out of step with U.S. national security interests. So let's just recognize the exceptional nature of this moment and the discussion that we're having today.
And the Committee on House Administration held a hearing on sexual harassment on Capitol Hill, during which members of Congress shared stories of women being propositioned and groped in the halls of the Capitol. Representative Jackie Speier testified that there are at least two current members of Congress who have engaged in sexual harassment.
In fact, there are two members of Congress, Republican and Democrat, right now, who serve, who have been subject to review or not have been subject to review, but have engaged in sexual harassment. These harasser propositions, such as, are you going to be a good girl, to perpetrators exposing their genitals, to victims having their private parts grabbed on the House floor, all they ask in return as staff members is to be able to work in a hostile-free work environment. They want the system fixed and the perpetrators held accountable.
Later on MSNBC, Speier told of huge settlement payouts at taxpayer expense. Senate Republicans on Tuesday announced they'd include the repeal of the Affordable Care Act individual mandate in their tax cut plan. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office last week said that eliminating the mandate would increase the number of Americans without health insurance by 13 million by 2027 and raise average premiums by about 10% annually over the next decade. I got the And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. My work is 100% listener funded, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. And for a bit more of what's going on in the news, we turn to our friends at the Talk Media News Service, TalkMediaNews.com, and Doug Christian's on the line. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Nicole. How are you doing today?
Doing okay. So, what's happening?
Well, we're talking about, the Weinstein effect. It's kind of the group Trump and Weinstein effect, where they finally, I mean, women who have been privately kind of holding in internally what's been going on and felt that their careers were endangered if they came forward, beginning to reveal. And I don't even think the vast majority have even begun to reveal. Because there has been a letter that after Jackie Speier's announcement that there were two sitting members of Congress that were actually accused internally of sexual harassment, 1,500 former staffers signed a letter to leadership of Congress saying that there has to be sexual harassment training. And obviously that means, or looks like it means, that most of those people had suffered some sort of harassment during their period and never been reported.
Isn't that amazing? When you think about how many people go through the Capitol, you know, each year, each term, and realize, and the rules are written so far against their favor. So now hopefully things will change. I think the training is necessary, but it's a bit after the fact. They need to change how you bring about charges against somebody who sexually harasses you.
That's correct. And right now, the rules are, as that letter points out, the rules are that the person who has been harassed has to go through counseling.
Yeah.
Not the harasser, but the person who's been harassed. And it's only after she goes through that process, only after another delay, which totals 90 days, can the person who has been groped then seek public redress.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 90 days, that's insane.
Yeah.
So these lawmakers have written the law, written the rules in their favor against the interest and staff. And I remember remarking years ago, I said, why is it that the women in the Capitol, almost all are young, attractive women. And this guy looked at me and says, because the congressman can. You know, it's kind of a known secret that this is what goes on in the Capitol.
It's stunning.
It's sad. It's
yes.
Seriously sad.
Well, hopefully things are about to start changing, although I don't hold out much hope. I don't, you know, I'll believe it when I see it, because the more we talk about these things, the better it is. But as far as change coming, I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it.
I actually don't hold out much hope, Nicole, for it, because I see just how pervasive it really is. And, I mean, it's not like I, as a guy, suffer that. But you just look around and I see the shadow of it.
Right. Right. You know, in her news notes, Victoria Jones sends out a quick morning news update each day. And she wrote a few of the unwritten rules women follow on the Hill. And included in them are be extra careful of male lawmakers who sleep in their offices. They can be trouble. I know a lot do. Avoid finding yourself alone with a congressman or senator in elevators, late night meetings or events where alcohol is flowing. Think twice before speaking out about sexual harassment from a boss. It could cost you your career. Plus, there's a creep list of the worst lawmakers. I'd love for someone to leak that creep list.
That would be very enlightening.
Yes, it would.
And it would be amazing, actually, if somebody would. Of course, whoever leaks it is doing it at their own peril. But I think it'd really be edifying. It'd be cleansing for everybody to see who that list is.
Oh, yes, because they've been protected thus far. You know, the fact is, Jackie Speier said there's two members of Congress, one Democrat and one Republican, on the Hill right now who are guilty of sexual harassment. And yet no one will say their names. So we're all left
exactly
wondering who they are.
As you know, there's so many people who know who those people
that's
are.
That's right.
And they're just keeping their mouths shut. Yeah, it's really quite it's astonishing. It's very sad.
Mm-hmm. What else is going on?
Yeah. Well, of course, we are seeing a covert attempt by the GOP to undermine Obamacare once again.
Yep.
By getting rid of the mandate. And of course, what this does is it saves the government $338 billion, and puts about 13 million people out of throws them out of health coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But this would be a great thing because we would be able to give tax breaks to billionaires. That is really a needed proposition.
Right. So we're going to actually be talking about that in a few minutes with our guest, Lori Lotus. She's a former communications director for the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services and is a co-founder of Get America Covered. Today, as of today, there's 1 month left to sign up for insurance under the Affordable Care Act, which as much as they try to get us to think that, Obamacare is dead, it isn't. It's still there. I've been trying to figure my way around the exchange. Unfortunately for me, the policy that I have has more than doubled in price. So I don't know what I'm doing yet. Yeah. It went from 470 something a month to over 1,000.
Oh.
Yeah. So
it's sad. And of course, those who oppose to Obamacare are trying to undermine it by making the markets less predictable, which means that insurance companies raise the prices even further.
Yep.
And so you're paying part of the premium that you're paying for is directly related to people undermining the market by making it less predictable for insurance companies to be able to figure out what their rates should be.
Mm-hmm. No, it really sucks.
So it really does.
The three basketball players from UCLA are home now, and I guess after Trump chastised them via tweet, not for shoplifting in China, but for not thanking him for getting them out. They thanked him.
It's all about him.
It's always about him.
I mean, he did not care about what the trade deals were or anything like that. As long as he was able to enjoy the pageantry that was offered to him by Asian leaders, and of course they learned from the South to do that is just put a big picture of him, give him a military parade, and he's butter in their hands.
Yeah.
And it's really quite sad. Of course, there is, of course, which isn't quite sad, which is quite nice, was that there have been 400 millionaires and billionaires representing the top 1% of this country that wrote a letter to Congress saying, please raise our taxes.
Really?
That, and they said they actually, they wrote a letter that said, look, we represent the highest income, many of the highest income people in America, and there is no reason to cut our taxes, to sacrifice health care for millions of people, or education. And, by the way, we feel that this tax cut would also increase the wealth disparity, which is already too high.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
good for
nice
them.
Good
yes, not that it'll have any effect, but good for them for doing it at least.
Yeah, I mean, there was a debate back in the 1950s that how much money is enough, and it's kind of sad that now it doesn't. There is no money that's too much.
For some people, yep.
Yeah, and that's kind of weird. I mean, it's like, wait a minute. I mean, aren't there other goals in life than just acquiring more? I mean, we have this thing in culture about hoarding, as though that's an issue. And yet hoarding money, no matter how much it is, even if there are people next to you that are suffering either from hunger or from disease, it's okay to hoard and not share.
Yeah. For them, I guess it is. Doug Christian from
exactly.
The Talk Media News Service at talkmedianews.com. Thank you, Doug. Always a pleasure.
Same here, Nicole.
All right. Take care. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to check in with Lori Lotus and talk about what's in store. I see there's Proud Scale on the chat room who said his premium was raised from $75 to $235 a month. I wish I could find something for $235 a month. We'll find out what's still on, what's there, what's the future of the Affordable Care Act, what does this mandate repeal mean, all that coming up in just moments. So stick around. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Trump and Congress are squabbling over how much to cut corporate taxes. But I say they deserve no cuts. Hear why today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. Here's a question for our Trumpestuous president and his trumpeteers in Congress. Why are you even considering giving more tax breaks to corporate giants? First, the self-serving corporate class is wallowing in wealth, greedily hoarding it in offshore tax shelters and stock buyback schemes, refusing to invest it to benefit the vast majority of people they've been knocking down and holding down. Second, you shouldn't give away our public treasury when our nation has a budget deficit and faces huge needs for public investment, from our deteriorating infrastructure to our disappearing middle class. Third, our people's sense of equality and social unity has been severely fractured by 30 years of gross wealth inequality. So intentionally widening the wealth gap is criminally stupid and dangerous. Fourth, why would you think overpaid, overpampered CEOs deserve more pampering? They've become imperious potentates who feel entitled to gouge, cheat, defraud, lie, and otherwise run over us commoners. Consider Jeff Immelt, the recently retired imperious CEO of General Electric. Not only was he a frequent flyer on GE's corporate jets, but we now learn that he often took two jets at once. One carried him, while a second jet, called a chase plane, followed right behind him. Number two jet carried no passengers or equipment. It was just a spare in case His Royal Highness needed it for, well, for what? GE offers no reasonable answer, for there isn't one. Immelt says he never used the spare, but there it was, tagging along behind him, costing GE shareholders thousands of dollars for every hour it flew. This is Jim Hightower saying, this wasteful extravagance cost you and me, too. For GE got a tax deduction for every flight Jeff's Chase plane made. Why would Trump and company reward such outrageous corporate ripoffs with more tax breaks?
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a Lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, we're back. Nicole Sandler here at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. And I'm happy to welcome to the show Lori Lotus. She's the former communications director for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services under President Obama and is the co-founder of Get America Covered. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Nicole.
Thanks so much for being here today. As of today, people like me who have health insurance through the Affordable Care Act, through the exchanges, have 1 month left to figure out what we're going to do. So you have offered to come on and talk to us a little bit about what is available. First of all, what is Get America Covered?
Sure. So we started Get America Covered just a little over a month ago to basically help people get the information they need to make a decision about signing up for health insurance. The administration made significant cuts to the outreach budget by 90%. They also have done taken a lot of other steps to really undermine the open enrollment process. And what that means is that people don't have the facts they need to sign up for health insurance. They didn't know that it started on November 1st. They don't know that they have to take action by December 15th. And most importantly, they don't know that financial help is available for most people. And so that's what we're here to do, is to get that information out there so that we can try to get as many people signed up as possible.
Well, despite the best efforts of the Trump administration, enrollment is actually up for 2018, right? Pretty substantially over last year.
It is. We just had new numbers come out this week or today, and about 1.5 million people have signed up overall, which is great. And that is about a 60% increase from how many people signed up cumulatively last year. So that's a really strong start. But I think the thing that I want to keep focused on is December 15th, because while it's, you know, only a month away, there's still a lot of time left for people to sign up, and we don't know what's going to happen. And so we want to make sure that we don't take our foot off the gas, so to speak, and that we really are doing everything we can to get more people covered.
You know, when you say we don't know what's going to happen, there's a new, I'm trying to think of the good analogy for it. They're doing it to us again, you know, where in this tax bill that they're putting forth, they're putting in the Senate version, at least for sure, repealing the mandate that everybody has to buy insurance. What is that going to do to the insurance program?
So what it will basically mean is that 13 million fewer people will have health insurance. For those who stay in the health insurance marketplaces, their premiums will go up, and that's all just to pay for additional tax cuts for the wealthiest and the big corporations. And they're really not hiding that, right? They are being pretty upfront about the fact that they're going to use this money so they can pay for a permanent tax cut for corporations. The idea that it's okay to take away health insurance from millions of people just to give the wealthiest another tax break, is beyond me, but that's exactly what they're doing. What it means for right now, though, is basically nothing. We want to keep people focused on signing up for health insurance. Who knows what Republicans in the Trump administration will be able to get done? As you said, they've tried this before and, you know, failed at it four times. So we don't want to be complacent. We really want to stay focused on getting people to sign up.
Right. And, you know, there are people like me. I'll be honest with you. The only reason that I've had insurance for the last few years is because of the Affordable Care Act. And by the way, I call it that instead of Obamacare, because maybe if we didn't, sign on to calling it Obamacare, the Republicans and Donald Trump wouldn't be fighting it so hard. So Jimmy Kimmel had a funny bit on the other night where he just decided to call it Trump Care. And people thought it was for real, because it is still available. It's still there, although we have this president who's telling us that it's broken, it's imploding, it's a mess, it's a disaster. It's none of those things, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, that's the thing that, is the most angering about all of this is just all of the lies that are being told to try to trick people into not signing up for health insurance, right? The health insurance marketplaces, they're strong, they're working. People still have choices, and they're still finding coverage that is really affordable. In fact, this year, plans are cheaper for most people than they've ever been before. Hmm. And honestly, that's because the Trump's decision to really try to sabotage the law and not make these payments that help lower people's costs backfired. So people are getting all of the benefits, and in fact, more of the benefits, which means that people are finding really low-cost plans this year like they've never found before.
Well, I wish that were the case with me. As I was saying, that's the only reason I've had it. And my policy has more than doubled in price. So I'm still in the exchange and going through all the different, and there's not that many there this year because a number of the insurers have pulled out because of the uncertainty created by the Trump administration. But I'm, it's like I can get this one, but my doctors aren't on that plan, or I can get this one that's, a little cheaper, but again, the doctors aren't there, or the one that's more expensive, the doctors are, but it doesn't cover my prescriptions or things like that. And my listeners know full well, I went through, again, it's a good thing I was covered under the Affordable Care Act, because I was diagnosed last summer, not this past summer, the summer before, with lung cancer. And thanks to the Affordable Care Act, I'm now cancer-free. But it's all the more reason that I counted on this program to be able to buy insurance, because without it, I have one of those pre-existing conditions. And, if they are able to repeal it, then I'm one of the many millions who are going to be screwed because I've got a pre-existing condition.
It's one of the reasons why I've been fighting for this law for so long, is exactly for people like you who have needed it, right? And who might not have had health insurance without it because of a pre-existing condition or for whatever other reason. And it really is a lifesaver for so many people. But you're also right that there are quite a lot of people out there who are left paying a lot more this year because of Trump's decision to play politics with our health care, right? While most people can get the financial help they need that covers their costs and really helps bring those premiums down, if you're not one of those people, you're left with premiums that have gone up by double digits, in a lot of places by 30%. And that's one of the big risks, to go back to what they're trying to do now with repealing part of health care through the tax plan. It's going to force costs up even more, so that the only people who will be able to afford it won't actually be able to afford it, but they'll have no choice, right?
Right.
Because of a pre-existing condition, because of a health issue, they have no choice but to get health insurance, which means when there's fewer younger and healthier people in there, premiums will just go up even more. So it's clear what they're trying to do, which is just to make the program crumble. And I think what's important is making sure that they own all of the sabotage that they are doing, right?
Right.
If they're gonna, they now own it, and if they're gonna break it and continue to break it, that means it's on them, and they should be held accountable.
Absolutely, and they will be, but 2018 elections are still a year away. So there's lots of confusion around the law and what's been repealed and taken away via executive order. Now, Trump made a big deal out of getting rid of the cost-sharing subsidies. Are those gone?
Not at all. And this is one of the tricky things that they've done is they, you know, trumpeted, we are stopping making these payments or we're stopping cost-sharing reductions. And so they stopped paying them, but they're still paying them. It's just coming in a different way. So I'll explain this as simply as I can. So they stopped paying the insurance companies who have to, by law, lower people's costs, lower their out-of-pocket costs, lower the deductibles if they fall into a certain income range. Now, that requirement still stands. So insurers, they increase their prices to try to make up for this. At the same time, the way the Affordable Care Act works is it protects people. It protects people who do have an income that qualifies them for financial help. So while cost increased, their financial help increased as well, which means that a lot of people are able to find cheaper plans this year because they're able to take their tax credits and apply it to a different plan or apply it to the same plan, and they just can buy a little bit more this year. So really nothing has changed. The Affordable Care Act is still the law, and it's going to be the law. Hopefully we can defeat this tax plan so they don't take any part of it away. But the tax credits, the subsidies, the financial help, however you want to say it, is all still there for people. And that's what we need them to know, is that there are a lot of good deals, and people will just need to go to healthcare.gov and shop. And they need to do that before December 15th, especially if they're in one of the states who do use healthcare.gov.
Right. And is it that way in all the states, even those who have their own exchanges where the sign-up period still ends on December 15th?
No. So that's a really important. If you live in New York, if you live in California, your deadline is not until January 31st.
Wow.
Now, there's no reason to wait, because if you sign up by December 15th, you will have health insurance starting on January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
But the states who have their own exchanges, and there's 11 plus the District of Columbia, they can set their own deadlines. So most of them have set deadlines into January, but it really just depends on where you live.
And again, the reason that they cut the enrollment time in half is to discourage people from signing up, because they don't want you to, just like they cut the advertising, the outreach dollars. They don't want people to know that, yes, this is when you can sign up and you can still sign up. They want it to fail.
Absolutely. The time is half as long as it was last year. One of the other important things is that there's only one deadline, and deadlines drive action, right? Think about tax day and how everybody waits. Most people wait until April 14th or April 15th to file their taxes. The same is true with healthcare, especially people who are younger and healthier and aren't necessarily thinking about their healthcare today. They put off those decisions, and so they wait until the deadlines. And so that's one of the things that is just so important for us to do this year, is to make sure that people know there's only one deadline. You have to take action by December 15th, or you risk not having coverage at all in 2018, and you still risk paying a penalty of $695 or 2.5% of your income, whichever is more. That can be a lot of money.
Yes, and that's because the mandate is still in effect, regardless of their threats to repeal it.
That's right. You know, they have been hard-pressed to get anything done in this Congress, so I don't want people to think that, well, the mandate's going away. And so it really is, the Affordable Care Act is the law, and there still is a penalty for not having health insurance. But more importantly, accidents happen. They happen all the time. And you don't want to be caught with huge medical bills because you decided that you couldn't afford a $0 premium to have health insurance. And that's the trade-off that people are really facing this year. Now, we want people to buy better, good plans that will cost them a little bit more money. But at the end of the day, if you're thinking about not getting health insurance, make sure that you've gone to look to see how much your premium really would be, because most people are finding plans that cost them $0 each month. And that's cheaper than the penalty. So we just need people to think a little bit and to shop to see if they can actually afford coverage this year.
Oh, it's definitely. So I was the last, never in a million years did I think I would be diagnosed with lung cancer. Cancer happens, accidents happen. Mm-hmm. The thought of going without health insurance is inconceivable. So, it is what it is. And a lot of people are finding great bargains this year. That's great to know at healthcare.gov. If you're in one of the states, that's the exchange you use because your state did not opt in. That's where you go. I'm in Florida, where one of our senators here is responsible for another thing that kind of sabotaged the Affordable Care Act, and that's Marco Rubio with the risk corridors. Can you explain what that means, what the risk corridors are?
So basically what the risk corridors do, and there's this thing called the three R's. There's a lot of risk involved. But basically, some insurers end up with people who are less healthy, and they are taking on more risk, right? They have older and sicker consumers. And so what it does is it tries to even it out so that insurers with healthier people are paying into it, and insurers with less healthy people are getting money back to try to spread the risk around to everybody so that nobody's left with really high cost that they can't afford to pay out. So basically, it's a way to even the playing field to try to keep everybody on the same footing. The problem is, as you said, Marco Rubio, who I am sure will be voting for this tax bill to give the richest more tax breaks, stopped these payments from happening. And so what that has done is that it has really – it's forced some insurers to leave the marketplace completely because they just can't afford it because of who their consumers were. So it's just – it's another – step that the Republicans have taken to make it more difficult for people to find affordable coverage. It's very wonky. It's very in the weeds. But at the end of the day, what it really comes down to is Republicans taking away affordable health care coverage for people.
Yes, and so you can thank Marco Rubio for that. We're speaking with Lori Lotus of Get America Covered. They're at getamericacovered.org. And you actually help people find learning what to do to get covered. If someone goes to getamericacovered.org, you can sign up for something. What does that get you?
So there's a couple of things that you can do. So first, we have a great tool that's right there on our homepage that if you are looking for health insurance, you can go and you can make an appointment for in-person assistance in your state so that you can get the help you need to navigate the process, or we'll take you directly to healthcare.gov. The other thing you can do, if you already have health insurance, but you want to help out and you want to help get the word out there, you can join one of our street teams. This Saturday, we are having a Get Covered Day of Action, where we want people across the country, no matter what state you live in, to go out into their communities and to hang flyers and to pass out brochures to make sure that we are getting the word out there wherever people are in their communities. Last year, when we were still running healthcare.gov, we had relationships or partnerships with 3,000 libraries and with coffee shops and with laundromats and with community colleges. None of that is happening this year. So we need to make sure that we just, you know, we put some sweat equity into it and go and hang flyers up, because it really is one of those things. People need reminders. It's not something they're necessarily thinking about in their day-to-day lives. So we need to be as in their face as possible to remind them that healthcare.gov is where they should go to find affordable health coverage, and that they have to take out action by December 15th.
I got to ask, Lori, how are you funded? Because obviously the government's not paying you to do this.
So you can donate to us on our website. So we have a lot of individual contributions of people who are wanting to help out and wanting to get the word out. We also have been funded by foundations and businesses. Basically, anybody who shares our mission to get people covered.
Okay. I want to ask about the Alexander Murray bill, because that's been hovering in the background. It was supposed to shore up the markets or shore up the exchanges and give some stability there so the insurers wouldn't be so freaked out. I think that was the end goal. What is the deal with Alexander Murray, and is that dead in the water?
Well, in fact, it's not dead, because what they're doing right now is they're saying that they're going to vote. They're going to take a vote on Alexander Murray at the same time or right after they vote on the tax plan. And basically, it's a switcheroo, or it's a fig leaf. It's whatever you want to call it, because what they're saying is like, no, see, we want to help strengthen the marketplaces. But if they repeal the individual mandate, Alexander Murray no longer matters,
mm-hmm.
right?
They've right.
already gutted the law completely. And so it's just a game that they're playing to make it seem like, oh, we're doing enough, you know, we want to make the marketplaces work. And if that's the case, they would not be repealing the individual mandate, because they know for a fact that what it will do is it will force premiums up. It doesn't matter if they make these payments for cost-sharing reductions. They will be doing enough damage that it will create a death spiral and force, it will do exactly what they've been claiming the affordable care marketplaces are. They will say that they've been saying that they are imploding. That's what they're trying to do, is to make them actually implode.
That really sucks. So, it's a good time to call your senators, call your congressmen, tell them, you know, no on this tax bill and no on repealing the individual mandate. We still don't know. I saw an article today. Hold on. It was at Talking Points Memo. Susan Collins is now speaking up again. She said, here's her quote. She said, "I'm no fan of the individual mandate, and I very much want to see tax reform, but I believe taking a particular provision from the Affordable Care Act and appending it to the tax bill greatly complicates our efforts. One of my concerns is that it will cause premiums in the individual markets to go up as healthier younger people drop out." And then she said, "I have new statistics." And she's carrying a big, thick black binder. She said that'll show that for some middle income people, it will cancel out their tax cut. The increased premium would be more than the tax reduction they'd get from this bill. So it's sounding like, Susan Collins hopefully will be a no vote again, but this is going to be really close.
It's going to be very close. And I think the thing that everybody needs to understand is that this threat is so real. And I realize, you know, because we have gone through this rigmarole, you know, four times now, five times now, I think this is probably one of the realest threats we've been through. There is just, they want to pass these tax plan and these tax giveaways to the rich so badly that they don't really care who it's going to hurt. And it is incumbent on us making sure that they hear from people, you know, that they get the message that it's not okay. And it's important for us to lift up comments from Susan Collins,
mm-hmm.
who is taking the time to actually understand what this means. And I don't think a lot of her colleagues are doing that. A lot of their talking points just make clear that they have no idea what they're talking about. Because at the end of the day, millions of people are going to no longer have health coverage. Many of those are going to be middle class people, because they're not going to be able to afford their premiums getting jacked up so much. And so we just need a lot of truth telling right now.
Yeah, we do. There's one more program I want to ask you about, because today is day 46 since this Republican-led Congress let the Children's Health Insurance Program expire, the CHIP program, which has been in place for a long time. And it doesn't get talked about a lot, but this, my kid has her, my daughter is 18, so she can remain on CHIP until her 19th birthday, which is in May. Now, who knows, CHIP may run out of money before that time comes because they have not renewed it yet. Do you know what the status is on that?
Right now, it is not good, right? They are focused on taxes. They are focused on taking away health coverage, and they are not trying to figure out how they make sure that children get to keep their health insurance. The biggest threat is if they don't get this figured out within the next month, right? I think, and it seems like they're going to be able to do something before the end of the year, but they need to continue to feel that pressure. Right now, 9 million children's health care is at risk,
yeah.
Which would be, I mean, it's just, it's unfathomable to me that it's actually gotten to this point, that we have gone so many days without them feeling the pressure to make sure that children have health insurance. So we need to make sure that we're talking about it. Unfortunately, they keep on trying to repeal people's health care, too.
Yeah. So, you know, it's bad enough our kids are losing their health care. Now they're taking away, they're trying to take it away from the parents as well.
Exactly. Exactly. And I mean, you know, I don't know really what they're trying to accomplish here. You know, it's not, at the end of the day, it's not going to save any money. Right? Taking away health care from people is just going to pass cost on to other people. And it really, their priorities are really showing in a way that's just, you know, the politics as usual is just a little gross right now.
Right. We're going to wind up people going back to the emergency room for their primary care when they don't have insurance, can't go to a regular doctor. It's going to return back to the days before the Affordable Care Act. And are people's memories that short that they don't remember how horrible that was and that the taxpayer ultimately got stuck with the bill in the end anyway?
Exactly. And I think that there is, and I think one of the things that scares me is like, okay, you repeal the individual mandate, and then what's next? What are they going to do to Medicaid? What else are they going to do to Medicare? And it becomes this slippery slope of just taking away coverage from people. And I do think there is this collective amnesia about just how bad the healthcare system was not too long ago, when women could be denied care because they were a pre-existing condition, because they had the nerve to have a C-section,
mm-hmm.
right? And they had to pay more than men because they could get pregnant. And I think that there is a, you know, we just forget about how awful the healthcare system was so, you know, so short ago. And not to mention the lifetime limits that people no longer have to worry about. And so I do hope, you know, I think the good thing that's come out of this past year and this conversation about repeal that we've been having nonstop is that people do have a better understanding of what healthcare is like today. But I do think we need to constantly remind people of just how bad it was not too long ago, and that Republicans are trying to turn back the clock.
Right. Well, and for someone like me or anyone, you know, look, I just turned 58. So when you get to be my age, you have a pre-existing condition. It's a fact of life. That's just the way it is. And before the Affordable Care Act, I could not get insurance because I'm self-employed. I couldn't get insurance on the open market. So it will return to those days, the Wild West days when people like me were uninsurable. That's just unacceptable. So right now, the exchanges are open. Healthcare.gov is where you go to in a state like Florida. And it's do you know how many states go to healthcare.gov? It's the majority.
39.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you live in Florida, Texas, all, you know, Pennsylvania, Ohio, all of those states go to healthcare.gov. But here's the great thing. Even if you live in a state exchange and you don't, you know, most people aren't keeping track, is my state, a healthcare.gov state or does it have its own exchange, just go to healthcare.gov. And if you put in your zip code and you're in California, it'll take you directly to Covered California. So you don't need to remember that.
Right.
Healthcare.gov really does act as a portal for whatever state you were in.
You can also go to getamericacovered.org. Lori Lotus, co-founder of Get America Covered, thank you so much for a lot of great information today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Nicole. It was great to be here.
Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye. All right. So that's the deal. We have 1 month after today. December 15th is the deadline. I'm working on it. I have no idea how I'm going to afford it, but I'm working on it. Tomorrow on the program, Howie Klein returns. So we'll talk politics with Howie. And what are we doing Friday? Oh, yeah, Derek Crowe. So we got to still have a good part of the week left. Thank you, as always, for listening. And I will see you again tomorrow right here at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network.